This is Brock and Salk
from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
It is Brock and Salk. Bob Stelton, Jake Heap sitting in for the guys today. And big news, the city of Seattle, a step closer to the NHL, and a man who's front and center. He's right there on the front lines, Jake. He's getting all of the dirt, all of the details. He knows exactly why things are going to happen and when they're going to happen. So we brought him in. He's with us on the Venue Kings hotline. You see him on King 5. He is Chris Daniels. Chris, how are you, man?
Good. It's been a long 24 hours, but it's nice, I think, for Seattle that after all these trips to New York City over the years, Seattle is finally getting a yes.
No kidding.
Well, for people that don't know why you're there, what actually took place, sort of explain, because you're still in New York as we speak, but tell us what went down there and what the vote was on.
Well, it was all about the Seattle group making their formal pitch for an NHL expansion franchise. It's been weeks or months in the making. This October 2nd date, yesterday, that the group led by David Bonderman, Jerry Bruckheimer, along with the CEO, Todd Lewicki, would walk into the league offices to make their formal presentation to the committee that's made up of really the 10 significant owners, the influential owners in the National Hockey League. And in their back pocket, they had what I referred to yesterday on air as the closer, Seattle Mayor Jenny Durkan. Also speaking at that meeting, went about an hour and a half, and they came out of that feeling pretty confident. And then NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman came out to the media after their regularly scheduled Board of Governors meeting later in the day and said that, yes, in fact, the executive committee unanimously recommended the expansion application to the full Board of Governors. And this is about as close to a done deal as you could be. There's still one more vote that has to happen in December on the 3rd and the 4th at a Board of Governors meeting. But Bettman yesterday saying a lot of things like, presumably when it's approved in 2020, if it doesn't work out, we'll do 2021. He was making it sound like it's about a done deal here. And it was the most positive news I've heard from a commissioner in all these trips to New York City over the years. Whether it be the NBA or NHL. So a significant day, I think, in Seattle history. And now you have an arena deal that's been approved by the mayor and the council and a team deal that's been essentially very close to being approved by the National Hockey League.
Chris, how refreshing is it to see a group that wants to bring a sports franchise, a professional sports franchise to the city, and to have the city of Seattle, the mayor, tag along with them, and to be able to kind of work together? How significant, how refreshing is that for us? It feels like it's been such a battle just to get the city to be on the side of getting professional sports into the city.
Yeah, I mean, in the past, we've had mayors that have been trashed by league commissioners. And, you know, yesterday it was funny to actually hear Gary Bettman talk about Mayor Durkan and how excellent she was in her presentation. It was just something I have not heard before from a league commissioner. And, you know, the city has been on board with this for a while. Obviously, it went through the whole process down in Soto. It went through this process over the last 2.5 years with Key Arena. And I think the city has to be thanking their lucky stars over the fact that you have a private investor that's willing to spend $700 million on an arena and another $650 on a team. I mean, it's hard to think back, you know, with precedent on any sort of deal like this, to spend $1.5 billion on a public park, essentially. I mean, it's a huge win for the city of Seattle. No wonder Jenny Durkan, the mayor, wanted to be back here to try and close the deal. It's really, thinking back to other arena deals, stadium deals in Seattle, there's been nothing like it.
Were there any moments of doubt along the way or sticking points as you saw it, Chris? Because I was telling Jake and Kyle before the show, I felt like since the Lewickis got involved and they settled on this Key Arena thing, that it was sort of a fait accompli, that this was the NHL, to me, has made it very clear how interested they are in the city of Seattle, how much they wanted a franchise here. It just felt like these are all formalities now. I know there's still one more vote, but I have zero concern about it. I didn't have concern about this. Am I being too flippant about this? Was there a moment of doubt ever in this process?
I think bringing in Todd Leiwicki helped them considerably. And Leiwicki, the younger Leiwicki, has said that he did his fair amount of mitigation. He had credibility in the market from his previous time here. He knew people. He went around to the folks around Seattle Center to ease some concerns. I think that was, I know others have referred to it as a game changer, but I think that was a pretty significant development because, there were questions about an environmental challenge slowing this thing up, and that was a surprise that nobody did that, according to a lot of people at City Hall who were expecting a challenge that could derail the arena. And, the fact that everything stayed on schedule and it was coordinated between the city and the National Hockey League. I mean, just think back to the last month and how these votes played out and then having this meeting. I mean, there was definite coordination between the Seattle Hockey partners and the city to get this done at a certain time to allow for a team to be here in 2020. So I'd say there were surprises along the way, especially in the last 6 months. But, here we are now with all the boxes checked, essentially, except that last one coming out December 3rd or 4th.
So, Chris, fill us in, these listeners. Everybody's excited about this. It very much looks like we're going to have the NHL in Seattle. What are the next steps? What can we expect to have happen? Obviously, this vote in December, but what's the process going to be like after that?
Well, I think you're going to get a positive vote out of that with these nine owners. I should point out Jeremy Jacobs, who's the owner of the Boston Bruins. He was part of this committee hearing yesterday. He is the head of the Board of Governors of all the owners, and that'll happen down in Georgia, right on the Georgia-Florida line, December 3rd or 4th. They'll take that vote. They need a three-quarters majority vote in order to fully approve this franchise, and then that'll be the day that you'll know for sure that Seattle's getting a franchise. I think the only question that's going to come out of that is if it's definitive for 2020. Gary Bettman kind of hedged yesterday on what would happen if there's a construction issue. Could they push it to 2021 if need be? He said that would be something that could be addressed later. Didn't get into a lot of detail on how that would work if the franchise is awarded. But, he said yesterday what the Seattle Hockey partners have been saying now for months. They want to have this team start in 2020. And I think after you get that full approval in December, you start talking about releasing the season ticket packages. You start talking about actually nailing down a name and a color scheme. That would probably happen in the first quarter of 2019. So that'll be the fun stuff that people want to be a part of after they get this final, full, expected, presumed approval in December.
Hey, Chris, before we let you go, I know you talked about being out there hearing a lot of no's from commissioners. You were front and center for the whole NBA debacle, if you will, here in Seattle. How much does this help? How much does this move the ball forward or move it down the court, so to speak, in order to get an NBA franchise here? Obviously, a new building will be in place, but just seeing another professional league commit the way the NHL appears to be committing, how much does that influence the NBA, if at all?
I think it helps in the way that the NHL is going to get in here first and get those season tickets sold and get the marketing dollars and get the, perhaps a slice of the naming rights the way they've worked it out with Bonderman being a major investor in the arena and the team. And the NBA, if they want to come in and make it work, they're going to have to figure that all out. And I think the NBA is still at least 3 years away from Seattle. And when you look at, their collective bargaining agreements and marketing arrangements and teams that might be in trouble, they're still a few years away. So the NHL is going to have a running start on them, and we'll see. But I think it helps a little bit, and it helps to have a guy like Bonderman, who's a minority owner of the Boston Celtics, here in Seattle as well.
He is Chris Daniels, the King 5. Chris, thanks so much for spending a few minutes with us. Safe travels, and we'll talk to you soon, man.
Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, guys.
There you go, Chris Daniels with the latest on the NHL, and it just feels like, all right, you got a few of these formalities to go through, but it's done.
Yeah, I mean, that's the exciting thing. That's the exciting thing moving forward, and like Chris said, now it's the fun part, getting the fans' interaction of, you know, what's the team name going to be? What's the color?
That's where
be?
The true angst will set in, is over team yes. colors and team name. Will it not? That'll be the biggest battle amongst fans and the text. And
that thing's going to get ugly.
It will get ugly. You say it in jest, but you know it's going to get heated. There's going to be just, I won't support a team called blah, 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 the Steelhead.
The Kraken.
The Kraken, whatever it is. There's going to be somebody going, that's the best name ever. And then there'll be somebody going.
Because it's different. With, like, the Seahawks, the Mariners, the Sonics, you were just born, and that was the team regionally that you rooted for.
Yeah.
Now, this team comes from scratch. You've never had an opinion on what the other teams were named.
Right.
And this one, it's like, wait, oh, we can choose?
Yeah.
Now I've got an opinion.
There's big responsibility here. We can't mess this up.
It doesn't matter. Whether it's the Totems, the Kraken, the Steelheads, whichever name wins, there's going to be a segment of that fan base that's going, this is ridiculous. I can't root for a team called the blah, blah, blah. This is terrible. How could you possibly think that's a good name?
Lydia, do you have an answer on this?
I think that they shouldn't let, as bad as it sounds, that maybe they shouldn't let the people decide on this one, that someone just up in the organization should just decide for us, because we might descend into chaos here in Seattle.
There's going to be a riot in the streets.
And that way people can just sort of dislike one person for coming up with the wrong name instead of, you know, the whole city.
Well, someone told me that there's a lot of historical names that have been out there in this city.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see if they kind of go back to tradition and kind of fill in some of that hockey spirit that that hockey fan base that's been here for a long time, or if they go with something completely different. It'll be interesting.
Somebody texting in, old people everywhere, mad at Kyle for saying no one was born before the Seahawks and Mariners were here.
I'd say no one. We.
There you go.
Way to clarify.
There Jake, Lydia, I mean Bob. Bob was here for the Metropolitans.
Sure,
the rest of us.
They didn't have cars when I was here.
Radio was invented.
We were horse and buggy. What are you kidding me? Outhouses, no electricity. It was weird. All right, before we get into other things, we're going to talk to Ray Roberts coming up at 9 o'clock. So we'll get into more Seahawks conversation with him. But I got into it a little bit with some people on Twitter. Not an argument, just a sort of a debate. The whole Mariners thing, right? It seems like the question is, should they blow it up, which I know Salk is in favor of, just trash it, tear it down to the studs and start over?
Yeah.
Or do you sort of try to add to what's there? You're going to subtract a little bit. You're going to try to move some pieces around. One of those pieces, and I've said this since day one, and I say it again today, is Nelson Cruz. And I understand he's going to be a free agent. And the perception is he's done. He'll be gone, which he probably will be. I don't want him to go. I don't want him to go. He has been your most productive hitter every year that he's been here. And I understand his age. I understand that he's going to be 39 years old and he doesn't play defense.
Mm-hmm.
He's never really played defense.
Do you say that? Do you say that emotionally, or do you say that?
No,
from...
I say it. Well, both. Yeah. Both. Because he's one of the greatest guys you're ever going to speak with.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also a Mariner fan. I want this team to succeed. So I'm not just going to have a guy on there. Hey, he's a great guy. I know he stinks, but no. He is your best producer.
Right.
He's led your team every year in home runs, runs batted in, I believe on OPS as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's been that guy even at the age of 38 this year, and he suffered some injuries. He still drove in 97 runs, hit 37 home runs. He is your best producer. And I'm not saying you build the team around him and you sign him to a long-term deal.
Right.
I understand he's 38. Sign him to a one-year deal with an option year.
Right.
How about that?
Well, I'd love to get your guys' thoughts on this, but the thing with Nelson Cruz is, to me, what DePoto was saying is that we're going to tinker this thing around, and we feel like we have the pieces here, and we feel like we have somewhat of a nucleus, and we're going to try and move this roster around so that we can compete. We got 89 wins. We're just, unfortunately, we're behind in a division where we've got other good teams, all these things. So they're not going to deviate too much. They're going to make some changes here, but I think Nelson Cruz is such a big piece to this. And if you're going to just tinker a little bit, to me, Nelson Cruz has to be here because you lose all of that.
Yeah,
who offense are you going to replace with him?
You know, we got into the conversation about the Mariners, like, where do you point the finger? Why did it fail? Why did it come up short this year? And there are a lot of reasons. There's not a singular reason, right? The pitching staff was decidedly better than anybody anticipated to begin the year. And in fact, so much so that it covered up what turned out to be a radically inconsistent offense and a flat offense. Look at the total number of runs scored.
Right.
The offense, to me, was the biggest problem throughout the year, but the pitching sort of covered it up.
And once the pitching wore down and you saw a guy start to falter, then the offense got exposed. You're talking about taking away a consistent producer. Again, a guy who drove in 97, hit 37 home runs, had the best OPS on the team. You want to remove that from an offense that's already scuffling, which I don't know how much you're going to be able to change this offense because you don't really have the pieces to attach to a Kyle Seager. If you want to move Kyle, he doesn't have a ton of value at this point based on what he's owed, what he produced.
Right.
You're going to have to throw something in with him. You don't really have something. And I know John Paul Morosi was on with these guys yesterday, and he talked about the Mariners just not having those trade chips.
We're going to get believe your computer me, up here. Just
the
to
Mariners believe me, he right said now, it. I don't believe so, no. He is probably the opposite of what they need to be doing right now. They have to get younger, more athletic, and probably a bit more defensive in their overall look.
Right. And I would agree with that in terms of being able to look into the future, but DePoto's saying that they're ready to win now, that they just need to move a little bit here and there, and they're ready to win. They're just looking to make that next step to get over the hump. And I feel like Nelson Cruz is a big piece to that.
Okay, before we get – and we're going to open up the phone lines for you if you guys want to weigh in on this. But we've got to make somebody's day here, James.
Somebody's going to get their day made. And that somebody, if they call in the next 5 minutes, is Neil Robison. Neil Robison won by following 710 ESPN Seattle on Twitter. So he's got 5 minutes to call the station.
Way to go, Neil.
Validate his prize.
How about that?
206-421-3776.
Free tickets.
He's doing cartwheels right now, if he's listening.
Free tickets just for following.
I hope if you enter this thing, you're listening every moment. I mean,
should be.
How? Imagine you enter this thing. You've got tickets to every game on the line, and you're like, oh, I was in the bathroom. I didn't hear it. Or I was in a meeting. You better have your family listening for you.
Yeah, you better have good
everybody.
Friends.
That's yes. Right. That's right.
They got to be blowing them up right now. Call. So hopefully he calls. And you can call in on this Nelson Cruz thing if you want to weigh in on it. 421-3776, toll free, 866-979-3776. And part of my reasoning in this is that I don't think you can tear it down and rebuild, because in tearing it down, you've got to get rid of pieces that aren't that attractive to other teams out there.
Right.
You owe Felix Hernandez $27.5 million for next year. Nobody's taking that. Mm-hmm. You owe Cano a boatload of money. Nobody's taking Cano. You owe Kyle Seager a boatload of money. Nobody's taking Seager. And you don't have the prospects to attach to these guys unless you're going to eat a big chunk of their salary.
Yeah.
Which completely contradicts what you're trying to do. Get rid of the expensive, less productive player. Bring in young, affordable talent. You can't do it. You're in a tough spot because you've committed to these guys financially. They're not attractive to other teams right now.
Yep.
And you don't have the prospects to attach to those contracts to make it more palatable.
Yeah. I think someone made a great point here on the text line just saying, what does it matter if a DH is young and athletic? They don't play defense.
Exactly. As long as he's producing, why do we care? He hasn't played defense. I know he's been in the outfield here and there, but you've never looked at him as an addition to your defensive
right.
prospects. You've well, never thought that from day one. The knock on him was, he's not a great fielder, but he gives you a ton at the plate.
Right.
Okay, now he's almost exclusively, you'll get a rare night here or there where he plays in the outfield, but he's pretty much exclusively a DH. He's still producing. I don't care if he's 59. If he's still hitting 37, driving in 97, right. I want him in the lineup.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also think, you know, from a locker room standpoint, there's so much dissension in that locker room that, you know, Nelson Cruz has been one of those stable guys in that locker room. And to me, again, like I said, there's so many reasons why I think Nelson Cruz is a big piece to this. If they are not going to tear this down, if they are going to just tinker and try and get pieces here or there, Nelson Cruz absolutely needs to be a part of this ball club because he brings so much to this. So much.
Yeah, 421-3776, toll-free, 866-979-3776. Nelson Cruz, would you bring him back? Again, I'm not making the case. You sign him to a three-year, four-year deal. I'm not saying that at all. I understand his age, and at some point, the skills will diminish to a point you're not getting the return on your investment.
Right.
I'm talking about committing for one more year, and maybe you throw a team option year or a mutual option on a second year, something along those lines. But he's coming off a season where, even with injuries, he hit 37, drove in 97 for an offense that didn't produce jack squat. Let's head out to Edmonds and bring in Mike. Mike, welcome to the show.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning, Mike.
Glad to talk to both of you. You're both very, very interesting to hear on the air. So.
Thanks. Well, thanks. I hope interesting is
that,
okay.
Yeah, that could go either way, man.
No, that's not the Chinese curse. That's a good thing.
Okay, yeah. Thank you.
Well, at the two points. The piecemeal approach seems like it takes away almost as fast as it adds. You're trading away prospects and you're adding guys, but it's really slow. And so I was in Salk's camp for the teardown. But the Cruz thing, I kind of don't care either way because he's a DH.
Really?
But Segura is a valuable chip. Following the Patriots model, you could trade him while he's high. And if I had to bet on what the cause of that scuffle was, I think it was D. Gordon calling out Segura, saying, what are you doing taking a day off with a shin bruise? And Segura firing back, well, at least I can hit this to a guy that's playing all season with a broken toe. So I think D. Gordon might be one of the more vocal leaders in that clubhouse if you gave him a chance, and that's what they need, and really would like to see him trade Segura.
Well, and they might, Mike, and I appreciate the phone call. That opens up a line, 421-3776.
Just a quick interjection, though, that you have to get creative with that because he does have a full no-trade clause.
Yeah, and you just re-sign him. So if you feel like he's problematic at all, which I don't know how other teams view Segura, but if you feel like, all right, this guy comes with a little baggage in the clubhouse, then the cost becomes prohibitive on some level. If you feel like, yeah, right, what he's being paid isn't worth what we're getting in return.
Yeah.
And keeping in mind, too, Robbie Cano is his best friend, and Robinson Cano is set to be here for a while. So
right,
getting yep, him to incentivizing him to trade him away
yeah,
would be really
tough. Well, I just have a hard time seeing them get rid of Segura. I know it's been thrown out there, but I just, Lydia brings up great points as to why that most likely won't happen.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, Segura was a productive player for this team.
Oh, yeah.
Very productive.
Productive enough to where they wanted to re-sign him.
Correct. And you know, there were drop-offs and there was drama and all those things. And hopefully that does not continue next year. Hopefully it doesn't continue next year. We'll see what happens. Hopefully they're able to fix that clubhouse. But in terms of production, Segura is one of those guys that I don't think you can get rid of.
Well, he is one. I get the motivation behind it because he is a guy that does have value.
Yeah.
In terms of age, in terms of what he gives you in the batter's box, in terms of defense, he's pretty good. He's not elite. He's good. So he's got some appeal to another team as opposed to, again, the big salaries we're talking about with Felix. Nobody's taking that. Nobody's going to take Cano's deal. Nobody's going to take Seager's deal.
Right.
And you're talking about a rebuild. In order to rebuild, you've got to rid yourself of these salaries, and you're just not in a position to do it. I get the desire to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're looking at it logically and saying, all right, how do we do it? You got to dump that salary. You got to be able to get rid of these players. You can't just say, all right, Felix, we're trading him, and everybody knocks on your door. That's not how it works.
Right.
They're not desirable players in some cases, and or the contract is mm-hmm. is way too cost prohibitive. So they're in a position where, yeah, you can talk about a rebuild, but it's not realistic.
Yeah.
Quickly out to Redmond, let's bring in Greg. Greg, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good, Greg. How are you?
Good. Well, I'm new to Seattle. I've only been here for about a year.
Well, welcome, man.
I'm from Toronto.
Okay.
And actually, if you compare the two franchises, Toronto and Seattle, there's just a world of difference. But if you, I was totally on board with the Mariners in June. I was like, all right, man, we're going to get playoff baseball here. Everybody at work, many of them local Seattle people, born and bred here, are like, oh, no, don't get on board. This is going to be the same old thing. And I'll tell you, the fan base, the local fan base apparently that's been here for a long time, they're tired of this.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, and I think it, being one of those, it's been hard. It's been hard to watch this franchise go from being exciting and fun and having these dynamic personalities on the roster to a long, long drought mm-hmm. of one not making the playoffs and bad teams and all of that. And I think, Salk saying tear this thing down, I think there's a lot of people easier said than done. And I think this fan base, we're so close, and I think that's the hardest part, is we're so close and we have to find ways to get over the hump because this fan base is itching. They want it, and the Mariners gave them just a little taste this year,
little
and
tease.
then took it away.
Yep. And unless you've got a very realistic way of tearing this thing down, then I'll be on board, but I don't think you do. So
right,
in lieu of that, don't get rid of your most productive hitter of the last 4 years. A one-year deal with an option year.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I'm saying. All right, it is Washington Wednesdays, which means we're talking Huskies. And Brock Huard, who better to talk Huskies than Brock Huard? He's going to join us next here. It is Brock and Salk.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
It is Brock and Salk. Bob Stelton, Jake Heaps with you. It's Wednesday. I don't know if you knew that. It is Wednesday.
Wednesday hump day.
You know what that means?
What's that mean?
Washington Wednesday.
Washington Wednesdays. Every Wednesday throughout the college football season.
Who better to talk on Washington Wednesday than the one, the only Brock Huard, who's normally sitting here, but I guess he's lounging around in a pair of pajamas at home, something like that.
Put some slippers on.
Close. What are you doing, Brock? Hey, Brock, what are you wearing?
Yeah, I'm in boxers and slippers.
That's no good.
And a bro tank. Yeah, that's what I got going right now.
Listen to the echo. What are you in the great hall of your home there? What is that? Oh, look at that. See?
Well, Bob, you complain about the echo and then you get nothing. I didn't realize it wasn't so bad.
No, I didn't realize I had that much power. I complained about the echo. It just disappears.
Unbelievable. This is my first time really being on a show about I didn't realize that he commands the station like this.
Oh, it's amazing.
You can just X Brock off.
We'll try to get Brock back. Didn't it sound like he was in a giant hall or something like that? I picture giant pillars in his house and all that. I think we've got him back. Brock, are you there?
All right, enough of that tie line stuff. All right, enough of technology. Let's just get back to the old school phone, okay? How's that?
There you go. Now we feel secure. It is Washington Wednesday. We were talking a lot about the Huskies earlier and just sort of it feels good coming off a performance like that. Jake Browning was great. Before we get into the matchup, quickly, can you just give me a thought? We were talking about which is better, Jake Locke or Jake Browning, and we talked about just sort of the readiness of the fan base to sort of jump on Browning. It feels like to me anyway that Locke sort of walks on hallowed ground. He walks on water, and Browning, who's been nothing but really good for this team, feels like he's just got such a short leash with the fan base.
Yeah, I think that is just our parochial nature, isn't it, Bob? I mean, you know it. You've been in this market. You've been outside this market. You know, Jake, you've played, football in other places. But as far as doing media work or fans or anything like that, this is still, I think, largely home for you. And here, we just kind of love our own. And I think, Jake Locker was the hometown guy. He was a state champion at Ferndale. He was the top 10 pick. He was the guy that was going to resurrect the program. And, he was just a really good guy to boot, just a farm boy from Ferndale that was super, super humble and always took responsibility. So I think for all of those kind of intangible factors, that's probably why he's, felt so much love other than for Mike Salk through all of these years. And, a Jake Browning who, I don't think just connects maybe with the fan base the way that Jake did. He's a little snarky. He's a little salty. He's hyper competitive. He's unbelievably tough. You get around the coaches and the staff and the people around that program, and trust me, they love him as much as anybody ever loved Jake Locker on that campus from a coaching staff standpoint. And that, I think, is really all that Jake Browning cares about.
No doubt.
And I'll tell you this too, Bobby, this segment is kind of fun for me because it gives me a chance to reach out to people that have covered the game. And in talking to, we chatted with Brady Quinn leading up to the game, and I was just texting with him this morning. And then I know some of the BYU coaches pretty well and reached out to them following this game. So I try to get feedback in this segment from not just my eyes, but people that have covered the team and seen the game. And I like what Brady Quinn said, and it plays to a little bit of your Browning conversation. He said that was one of the first times that it looked like 2016 again. Mm-hmm. But that felt like Jake Browning the 2016. My gosh, was he on point, and he was so accurate, and he was just on time and in rhythm. And much of what you saw in 2016 before the USC game that year, where a lot of it came kind of crashing down because of a shoulder deal, he looked like that guy again, and that portends to some good things to come. And talking to people around BYU, excuse me, I'll just finish off, and then we can hammer through some things. They really felt like, what everybody has said, and that is the strength of the UW secondary is for real. And even though Tanner Mangum completed a lot of passes, that defense dictated. I love to say on offense, wide receivers, quarterbacks, never, ever let a defense dictate. You got to be the one in charge. But I think most people that have played Washington, and you can get in line there with Herm Edwards and BYU and North Dakota, Utah, And I think even Auburn, to a degree, especially in that second half, I think they would all tell you that that defense at Washington dictates a lot of what you do offensively because of their strength at every level.
Yeah, it's a tough task to go against that UW defense. They're playing very, very well right now. Brock, just going off of Jake Browning's performance and everything that happened that night, I mean, everything seemed to be clicking. What do you attribute that to? What do you attribute this offensive success that kind of this offense has kind of hit its stride a little bit the last 2 weeks? Arizona State, BYU, it seems like it's definitely found its groove in that, you know, Bush Hamden is finding his rhythm here.
Well, I think that's part of it, and you know that, Jake. It's just that comfort level between that new voice in your headset, and in college football, I guess it's not a voice. It's the hand signals of the plays coming in.
Yeah.
But it is still that relationship of play caller with his quarterback and knowing exactly what, you know, that guy wants. And even though Bush Hamden had been there as a receiver coach, came away, came back in, this is the first time that he's ever called plays. And having, you know, to work an entire week and put a game plan together and react in game to things that are and are not working. So I do think you're seeing some of the, just the comfort. And Bush said that to us a couple weeks ago in our production meeting leading up to the ASU game. And I think even Coach Peterson said largely the same thing, even coming out of this game, that there's still a feeling out process of who we are and exactly what we want to be. We know we want to be multiple. We know we want a lot of formations and shifts and tight ends and a lot of personnel. But outside of those wants, then what is really the secret sauce and what's the nuts and bolts of it? And I think bottom line, this season is going to rest on Jake Browning. It always does as a quarterback. I know Miles Gaskin's awesome and Savon Ahmed is a nice 1-2 punch, but this season's really going to, I think, fall. And he wants it that way. And Jake Browning wants it that way. And he has total command of this ship. It's going to go as far as that right arm continues to take him. And, you know, one other little nugget I heard too is that, you know, and one of the reasons that staff and the people around that program love Jake is he never complains. But that little knee injury and that little knee brace may have been a little bit more than just a token knee brace that he was fighting. I think through some of that, he would never say it. They would never say it. They will never make an excuse or explanation. But he looked, you know, to have even a little bit more juice and a little bit more health in those legs, which would be a big part of it too.
Brock, I know, you know, there's turnover every year. You got new kids coming in, kids leaving. I had to double check this stat with Howdy. They have not beaten the Bruins in the Rose Bowl since 1995. That's we're talking 23 years since they've beaten the Bruins at the Rose Bowl. Now, this is a dreadful Bruins team. In three of their four games, they weren't even competitive. So I know you never assume anything can happen. Should we assume the win here? I mean, there's no excuse to lose to this team, is there?
No, and UCLA will probably make a few plays as they did against Colorado last week at Colorado. They played their better game of the season for 2.5 quarters. They were highly, highly competitive, but they're playing so many young people, freshmen, true freshmen across the board. They've been hit by a lot of injuries. No, this is the one you were built for. You know, this is the season that you're built for. You have 6 seniors defensively. You may lose your safety and corner early to the NFL as well. We have seen that over the last few years. You can lose your 4-year starting quarterback. We'll see if Trey Adams comes back to school. You could possibly lose your right tackle and your left tackle if he too decides to leave. And oh, by the way, the most prolific running back in the history of your program. So, Bob, you add all of that up. And this is your season. This is the time that that you put it together and you take care of business at UCLA. And then you are talking about a gargantuan, one of the biggest games in the Pac-12 this year at Oregon the following week, 12:30 on ABC, with Oregon coming off a bye week. So, no, you've got to take care of business down there. And by the way, it was in 95 that Damon Huard led those Huskies over Donnie Edwards. I was redshirting. I was on the sidelines. And I remember thinking, man, this game is so fast. This is a lot faster than Puyallup High School. And Damon and crew got it done that day.
How cool. Right. That's awesome. Hey, one quick thought here. Moving forward with this group, how important do you think this UCLA game is for them? Not just in terms of getting the W and in the Rose Bowl and all those things, but in preparation, like you talked about, this Oregon game, using this game in preparation for that game and just continuing to stay on schedule with the way this group is playing right now.
There you go. You just said it yourself. Schedule and rhythm, man. Stay on rhythm. You want to stay on rhythm. And the coach there, the D coordinator at UCLA, spent time with Chip at Oregon. You know, he likes to blitz. He likes to be very aggressive. And you make sure you just have total command, that you come out of this thing healthy, that you come out of it flying. And as I said, Oregon Week is, man, it's going to be something special if they take care of business this week. And that sets up for the biggest game in the conference next week down in Eugene.
Brock, it's always good to talk to you, buddy. Now go back, put the slippers on, keep those on, the bro tank, the boxers, and enjoy the day.
Molly, I like some marshmallows in that hot chocolate, sweetie. Okay. All right, Bobby.
You're going to get in trouble for that one.
See you, buddy.
Bye.
There he is. There's Brock Huer just spitting out orders to the missus.
And trust me, he's going to pay for that one.
Yeah, I'm guessing he will. All right, good to talk to Brock. Coming up, it's good news, bad news, no news next. It is Brock and Salk.
Good news.
Yes!
Bad news. No news. Now, here's Brock and Salk.
Good news, bad news, no news is one of my favorite segments of all time that's not on my show.
Good news, bad news, no news.
The NHL Executive Committee voted yesterday unanimously to approve expansion to a 32nd franchise in Seattle.
It's great news. It's fantastic news. How could it couldn't be anything but great news? I guess unless you just think hockey stinks. You don't want to. You think we've got too many pro franchises here as it is? No more.
Right.
Outside of somebody who thinks that way, this is awesome news.
This is great news. And the thing that's really cool about this is I have to admit that growing up, I didn't know a whole lot about hockey. I still don't. But as we're going through this, there's so much excitement. There's so many people that are excited about this franchise coming into Seattle. And this place is going to be rocking. This arena is going to be packed. Passionate fans, and I promise you I'm going to spend the next year or two, you know, gearing up, getting ready for this thing.
Talk to Lydia. She'll get you educated.
I know. She's the one.
Well, and she and I share some of the same roots. I lived in St. Louis for a little over a year. And there I'd watched hockey here and there. I wasn't a huge fan, but there's a passion for it. So I went to a decent number of St. Louis Blues games. I'm not going to pretend to know all the rules and everything, but it was decidedly more fun in person.
Yeah.
Without question. I don't know that it's a great TV sport. I don't know how you feel about it.
Oh, it's still a great TV sport. But I would to your point, I would say that, yeah, it's maybe the best live sport.
I would say there's the biggest disparity between live and TV in hockey than compared to any other sport. Is that fair? Yeah,
it's 50% stupid, but it's fair.
Yeah, I hope
50% smart.
Great answer. Great answer.
Should take a shot.
Good news, bad news, no news.
Little shot.
Michael Kendricks was suspended indefinitely by the NFL.
This is bad news, and I'm going to tell you why this is bad news. Not only because Kendricks was a good player and he did a great job filling in from day one since he's been a Seahawk for the short amount of time, but we just lost Earl Thomas. There's no sign of KJ Wright coming back, and unfortunately this is all happening when the number one offense in the NFL that is lighting it up is coming into town. It just is bad timing, and unfortunately we're gonna be down a little bit, and you know, let's get ready for a tough game this coming Sunday.
It's brutal news.
Yeah,
I but you know, it's not surprising news, but it's brutal because of how productive he was in the short amount of time he was here. He hit the ground running. He had an impact. You saw him sacking the quarterback. You saw him making plays on in pass scenarios. I mean, he was just a guy who seemed very active.
Yeah.
There was no that's the word I'm looking for. No uncertainty to the way he played. He didn't look like a guy going, wait a minute, where am I?
No, he filled in for KJ, and it was like, man, this is awesome. There wasn't a huge disparity between him and the production that KJ brought, and that was a huge boost to us.
And the timing of this is poor because you were hoping he could last just enough to get KJ back into the fold. You hope they'd be able to just seamlessly have that transition where, okay, the penalty's been handed down, but hey, good news is KJ Wright's ready to come back. Unfortunately, that's not the case.
Exactly. Austin Kalitro got to step up.
Good news, bad news, no news.
Earl Thomas was fined $10,000, cool 10 grand, for taking a bow for the Cowboys bench.
It's not good news. I'd say it's no news. You expected something to happen. He'll be fined for his hand gesture as he left the field.
Right.
He's as much as his whole problem, all the angst he feels centers around money. This is like a dollar to you and I. This is to the common man, the common unwashed out here.
Yeah,
a guy who's making 500 grand a week, being fined 10 grand. He's like, whatever.
Yeah, to me this is no news. I mean, this was obviously expected.
Good news, bad news, no news.
The Warriors will face the Kings in a preseason NBA game at Key Arena this Friday.
Man, I am so torn about this because I want to say good news because KD's coming back in the Key Arena. And not that he's just coming back because he was old Sonic, but because he has fond memories here. And he's made it known throughout his career that he loves Seattle, that he appreciates his time there. And so it's going to be great to have him back in that building. But it's just a reminder and a gut punch that we haven't had the Sonics for 10 years. Mm. 10 years. That just is unbelievable to me.
Yeah, I think it's really good news because this is a guy who's carried the Sonics flag since he's left. He's worn the gear. He's talked about it. Mm-hmm. I think he's beloved in the city, and I think he loves the city. So it's a chance for fans to show their appreciation for him.
Yeah.
And give you a taste of what you've been missing and what you might be seeing. And we talked to Chris Daniels about this. The NBA is going to be back in Seattle. When?
Yeah.
He said 3 years or so,
right,
give or take. Maybe it's going to be 5 years. I don't know. It will be back in Seattle at some point.
Right.
I'm one of the few people that still like the NBA. I would love the NBA to be back in Seattle.
There's no question. I think, again, you talk about a fan base that would love to have the NHL here. NBA, when it comes back, it's going to be special. It's going to be a huge moment in the city, and I can't wait till that actually happens.
Hey, reminder, this hour of Brock and Salk is brought to you by Precor Home Fitness. All right, we're going to talk more Seahawks with a man who knows what it is to play on that offensive line, which to me has been sort of a pleasant surprise. I don't think they've been nearly as bad as some thought.
I think it's kind of a tale of two games. You know, the first two games were a little rough.
Yep.
And then these last two games, they've really kind of turned it on. And we'll talk to Ray about, you know, kind of why that is. And I think there's an obvious answer to this, but I'm excited to, you know, kind of pick Ray's ear and get into the nuts and bolts of this thing. And he's going to be able to eloquently point this out for us.
Ray Roberts will join us next. Here it is, Brock and Salk.